Indeed, if you took a look around and you were French in 1881, 82, 83, maybe you have Tunisia, but you don't have much else. You have the Italians upset with you. You have Austria and Russia allied with Germany. Okay, you are rebuilding. You feel secure, at least from immediate attack, but you're not getting back Alsace-Lorraine soon at all. That's pretty clear if you have any common sense. Although the early 1880s also saw some slight Bismarckian moves in the colonial direction, and Berlin once again served as the diplomatic center of Europe during a colonial Congress of Berlin held in 1884, mainly over Africa, establishing the rules of the colonial game among the great powers, the right of first occupant, what about the people who already live there? But the first European power that got to a particular region and put its flag down at that on that region was supposed to have preferential rights to that region. The second half of the 1880s saw threats to Bismarck's accomplishments, this time arising both from France and again in the Balkans. Now, the French were having, as I indicated before, not the easiest time. In fact, even the British weren't having the easiest time. In the Gladstone ministry from 1892 to 95, Gladstone, against his own desires, actually got involved in suppressing an early proto-colonialist rebellion in Egypt to stabilize the rights of creditors there. In 1882, Gladstone asked the French if they would go along with the British to do this. The French had some domestic issues on their own hand, and in a fit of absent-mindedness, they said no. The British went in alone and stayed there till after World War II, to the extreme discomfiture of the French, who felt that the British had stolen Egypt from their dual control after the French, having been given the opportunity, chose not to take it. So now France is angry and irritated with the British, and it has Tunisia, but Britain now has Egypt. So these colonial issues began to boil in the early 1880s. But conditions again got worse in the Balkans, always more dangerous, and where hardball was really played. Crude Russian bullying of client state Bulgaria in 1885, the kidnapping of the Bulgarian king, led to renewed tensions with Austria and with Great Britain. Queen Victoria calls the Russians brutes and, much worse, Asiatics. This, again, undermines the whole structure of that Three Emperors League, linking Germany, Austria, and Russia. At the same time, our old friend General Boulanger is Minister of War in France, issuing wonderfully provocative statements and riding his magnificent horse, under the guise of general revanche, being called upon by French nationalists not only to overthrow the Republic, but also to begin a war against Germany. And this accentuates the whole problem. What does Bismarck do at that moment? He actually uses it to provoke a crisis with France in order to get a military bill passed to get the taxes he needs. And this worked. However, the Three Emperors League was again dead. And this shows us how difficult it was to get Austria and Russia for any lengthy period of time to work together in the Balkans, how destabilized the region was, how disruptive problems arising from it could be, and how quickly tempers could flare, and how quickly alliances achieved would be alliances that no longer existed. Undeterred, undaunted, and still concerned, in 1887, Bismarck helped broker several Mediterranean agreements, get ready, between Italy, Austria-Hungary, and Britain, generally providing for the status quo in the Mediterranean and in the Black Sea, both against France in the Mediterranean and against Russia in the Black Sea, and then signing a separate Russo-German reinsurance treaty as well,